From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois is no longer the fifth largest state, dropping in population for the fourth consecutive year. According to new data released by the U.S. Census Bureau, Illinois is now the sixth largest state behind Pennsylvania, New York, Florida, Texas, and California.
State officials announced today that lost food stamp benefits for tens of thousands of people will be reinstated by tomorrow, but there are still many questions that remain about why this happened.
The governor says his administration is doing all it can to combat the problem of Legionnaires in the water, which has led to a total of 13 deaths since a major outbreak in 2015.
Okay. Governor, at the Veterans Home in Quincy, would you drink that water?
Absolutely.
Do you as governor bear any moral responsibility for those deaths? Moral responsibility.
I'll tell you this, it's heartbreaking that anyone should have suffer a health challenge or be exposed to bacteria.
Do you bear any moral responsibility for what happened with those deaths in Quincy?
Bottom line, I work every day to support our veterans. They are our heroes, and I will never, ever back down or give up on fighting and working to keep our veterans safe.
It was kind of a rough week for Governor Bruce Rauner again. He continues to face scrutiny over his administration's handling of Legionnaires' deaths at the Quincy Veterans Home. State also cut off thousands of people from food stamps a few weeks ago, and all that the problem now appears to be resolved. It did bring plenty of bad publicity. And the state slipping behind Pennsylvania in population. We'll talk about that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in our State House studio, Brian Mackey. He's the Illinois Public Radio State House reporter. And joining us by phone today, Rick Pearson, political reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Rick, good to have you on once again.
Thank you for having me.
And Rick, I'll start with you because we heard you at the start of the show. You asked a question that I think gets to the heart of what a lot of people are wondering right now. Who's responsible for this problem at the Quincy Veterans Home? You were asking the governor over and over if he bears a moral responsibility. And what basically prompted that question from you?
Well, part of it is, and I think it goes to a larger question of the governor, even going more recently, that famed, "I'm not in charge here," is the governor basically playing a blame game? And, you know, is there a point where this governor accepts responsibility for anything that happens in the state? And I purposely asked about moral responsibility as opposed to legal responsibility, because that's something that's being litigated in some of these lawsuits and the court of claims over people that died in the 2015 outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home. But I asked about moral responsibility. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, where does the buck stop on anything that happens in Illinois?
And Brian, this week some more news came out about the Legionnaires outbreak, the one that occurred in 2015. And that came out through some emails that our member station WBEZ obtained, the reporters Dave McKinney and Tony Arnold. And they reported that the state waited several days before, basically when they knew they had an outbreak on their hands, they waited several days to publicize that.
Yeah, I think it was about 6 days. And that just goes to the question here and what we've heard from the families of the people who died at the home is, you know, if they might have known, they might have had the opportunity to get their relative out of there or check on them. You know, as we talked about on last week's show, one of the people was found decomposing because they had been deceased for a couple of days in their residence at the veterans home. So families are certainly upset. And of course, it was the lawsuits that kind of brought a lot of this to light. People have filed claims in the court of claims, you know, against the state of Illinois for these deaths. And I think there are going to just continue to be questions about the administration's response here, the timing of what actions they took. What did the old cliched question, what did they know and when did they know it? But there are people want to understand what's happening here.
Well, certainly this is a tragic situation. But Charlie, what I've been a little surprised by has been the administration response here. I mean, you find out you have a problem, even if after it's been uncovered here by more recent reporting, it seems as though the administration's still saying everything's okay.
Well, I don't know if they're saying everything's okay. It's things are bad, but we have it under control. And the fact that there have been more recent cases after supposedly it was all handled after the 2015 episode strikes me as, no, it's not okay. And I think there's got to be more done. As we've talked on the show before, why not try and find alternate placements for these individuals? Now, the administration has said, well, this would upset them because they're elderly people, they're used to living there. I'm thinking to myself, that may well be, but if their health is endangered, and the Legionnaire, it's not something you get from drinking the water. You get it from the vapor. You get it from the tiny droplets of moisture in the air. Now, think about the last time you took a shower. Was there any water vapor there as you were soaping up and rinsing off? My guess is that you're being exposed every time you take a shower. So as I say, to me, the prudent thing would be to try and explore alternate residential settings for these individuals, and we, the state, pay for it. We don't expect the families to do it because it's our fault until the situation can be remedied.
And Rick, was any of that brought up to the governor during this news conference you attended?
Well, the governor was asked about, you know, about moving people. We have Senator Dick Durbin says he thinks the facility ought to be closed. Then the governor was asked about moving that. He said that was explored. A number of things were explored, partial shutdown of the facility, that kind of thing. But he said that the experts say because of the age of these people at that home, that they actually face a greater health risk by being moved and the whole transition of moving than what the situation is right now at the Quincy Veterans Home. But Public Health earlier in the week released a couple of reports, a report from last year that followed up on the over $6 million worth of remediation efforts there. And it was unbelievable. They were putting in like new aerators on faucets and new shower heads and things. And they installed, you know, new boilers and things, cranked up the heat on the water, ran the water. They had filters that were supposed to last, according to manufacturer's recommendation, for 31 days. They lasted 31 minutes. Hmm. That's how much gunk and garbage was in that water system. And you're talking about century-old pipe systems. It obviously an infrastructure problem. There's ongoing testing going on. Public Health on Friday released a report saying of 48 water samples at the facility, 47 came back negative. One tested positive. It was behind a filtered shower head. So apparently the shower head with the filter would have prevented any of the Legionnaire bacteria from coming out. But still, that shows it's still in that system.
I don't like to compare, you know, past cases of something occurring in the state and what we're dealing with now. But, Charlie, we were just discussing something actually earlier this week, and you went back and did a little bit of research on another public health issue that had occurred and the response that was taken then.
Yeah, and this goes back 30-some years, so I suspect that Rick and I are probably the only ones who remember it. This happened during the Thompson administration. It was a 1985 salmonella outbreak up in the Chicago area that at the time was the worst in the nation's history. Six people died. Something like 17,000 people were sickened by it. Evidence pointed to a dairy in the west suburbs as being the source of this contamination. The Department of Public Health waited 11 days to force its closing. And during this time, and as I say, this was under Governor Jim Thompson, the director of the Department of Public Health was actually down in Mexico. And when Thompson found out that he wasn't on the job, so to speak, he fired him. Just bam, just like that. The guy was out. And Thompson was very, very upset about that.
And certainly the people involved in this case, we have no evidence that they've been out of town.
Oh,
they've
no,
been working
no.
on it. But it is a similar – it is something, you know, a public health emergency and a response a governor took. The governor here does not seem to be – I don't know that he's portraying himself in a way that makes people feel he is doing something, even though they may be doing that behind the scenes. It doesn't seem that way to me as far as just what I hear through the media.
Yeah, well, and I mean, we're in the middle of a political campaign. He's running for re-election. His opponents are, you know, Democrats are trying to use this issue as part of their argument about his competence. Republican State Representative Jeannie Ives, who's challenging him in the primary, is using this issue toward, you know, to say about his competence. So when, as we heard at the top of the show, Rick asked him, you know, do you bear any moral responsibility for this? I mean, he says things. He says he's fighting for veterans and we're doing everything we can, but he doesn't really answer that question. And I don't think he wants to answer that question, but somebody pointed out this week, I think it was some Democrats, that, you know, when there were some, I think it was in DCFS, there had been some deaths of people under the care of DCFS under the Pat Quinn administration. And the governor, when he was still a candidate, said Quinn bore moral responsibility for those deaths under the state's eye. So the Democrats are saying that, you know, the governor ought to step up and take more responsibility for this.
Earlier this week, the governor got to spend some time with the Chicago Tribune editorial board. Rick, you were there. Tell us a little bit about that appearance and what made it stand out, because it certainly some of the what was written about stood out to me. But I'll let you take that part.
Well, it was an hour-long session, and in fact, the governor had asked for that time from the editorial board for kind of an end-of-year wrap-up. And of that hour, the governor started out speaking for the first 35 minutes, very subdued, very low tones, not any kind of a passionate explanation of his tenure. But what stood out and to me was, you know, in this editorial board back in 2015. He talked about using crises as leverage. I know some people said, well, when the board brought that back up to him, actually, we didn't bring that back up to him. He brought out the words on his own that the state of Illinois, in his view, missed taking an opportunity of the crises of the budget stalemate of historic proportions, and blamed, of course, Mike Madigan, but also blamed the lack of principled legislators in the General Assembly. And, you know, it's a lot of pointing fingers. And, you know, does he bear some responsibility for this? Certainly. We know that it was a titanic test of wills versus of ideology going on between a Republican governor with a pro-business agenda trying to weaken unions that are the big political support of Democrats who control the General Assembly. But he blamed Rahm Emanuel. He blamed one of Rahm Emanuel's chief financial supporters, saying that, you know, he and Emanuel were working together on things. And as soon as the Laquan McDonald shooting video was released, the youth that was shot 16 times by a police officer in Chicago, as soon as that came out, that he said Emanuel scurried for political protection of Mike Madigan, and that was the end of his ability to try to use the mayor and use Chicago to help move his agenda in Springfield. A couple of things wrong in the timeline there, because there really wasn't that much going on with that when that video surfaced. There was a police and fire pension bill that was something that the governor thought could be a leverage against public employees unions. The bill didn't end up anywhere near the way that the governor had wanted it to be. But again, just fingers of blame cast throughout here. And again, the larger question, you know, doesn't he bear any responsibility?
Well, that strikes me, looking back at it historically, of all the governors that I've covered, and I go back to Dick Ogilvie, this is the first guy who pretends like, oh, I'm not in charge. Somebody else is. Everybody else would take charge. And, you know, you asked the question about morally responsible. Now, nobody suspects that Governor Rauner is over there feeding these bugs into the water system. But if you're the governor, you're the top guy, and you're responsible. And you got to be man up, and you got to be, what would you say, adult enough to say, yeah, I'm responsible. I'm the governor, and I'm doing everything I can to try and remedy the situation, but the bottom line is I am the governor.
The buck stops here.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brian. I know you had some.
It struck me that one of the other interesting things is that he seemed to really blame House Republicans for, in his view, buckling under the pressure of no budget and going with the Democrats on passing a budget, passed for the first time in 2 years, I should add, passing a tax increase. And he talked about, you know, when you're trying to team up with people who are doing it because it's a job and they want a salary and a pension and they want to take the easy road, it's hard. And this is something he has consistently done. He seems to have this belief that his side is principled and it's the right thing to do, and the other side, they're just in it for the money. They just, you know, they want the union support. They want the cushy job. They're under the thumb of the speaker. Instead of acknowledging, as many Democrats have said, even if you get rid of Speaker Madigan, if he were to be abducted by aliens or disappear or go to Costa Rica or something, Democrats are still not going to go along with a lot of what the governor wants to do just because they don't believe in it. They believe that people have a right to collectively bargain and that unions have been a force for good in society. I mean, that is one of the core tenets of being a Democratic politician, it seems to me. And the governor not seem to acknowledge that.
And Brian, following up on that, so, you know, once again, he says, oh, people say I'm anti-union. That's spin baloney. But then when he talks about what would be different in his second term, he counts on court rulings that would vastly weaken union and collective bargaining rights in the state of Illinois. But no, he's not, you know, he's not anti-union, he says. And that's the core tenets of what he's looking for as a successful way to try to bypass Mike Madigan and the power of Democrats is to go to the courts, the U.S. Supreme Court and the Fair Share case that's supposed to be heard in February, and as well as a case involving Chicago suburb Lincolnshire that had passed a local right to work ordinance.
Well, you know, and I also found it kind of disheartening that he would disparage the entire General Assembly. Now, Rick, you've watched the General Assembly longer than I have, but I watch it on a daily basis for the Sun-Times for almost 25 years. Yeah, there were people there who were basically zeros, there were ciphers, there were hacks, but there were also a lot of principled people who were there for the right reasons, who were fighting for ideas that they believed in, who were representing their constituents, and despite all the bad publicity for politicians and lawmakers, I still believe that the majority of the people who are there for the right reason. And so I think it's kind of insulting for the governor to talk that way. It's like he has no clue.
Well, the other problem, I think, with what I heard, and Rick, you touched on that, and the fact that what would be different in his next term if he was able to win another term, you got to figure that Democrats have a pretty good shot of hanging on to the legislature, both the House and the Senate. So he's going to have to deal with Democratic control once again if he were to be reelected. And it doesn't strike me that there's a lot of a different approach, at least right now, that he's talking about. So are we headed to, you know, for four more years of gridlock if the governor wins another term?
Well, I mean, more immediately, I think we're not likely to see any kind of budget for as we move forward when he gives his budget speech in the spring, you know, with the election year and everything going on like that. But it's. You know, here again, he tries to play the outsider role, and it's Mike Madigan's fault. It's the Democrats' fault, and you know, as Brian pointed out, but that's not even. Then he goes even further, and it's well, my caucus, the Republicans, they're not a team. They started out as a team. We're all a team together, but then they gave their principles fell away, and you know, it's. You would think at this point you would have established the fact that, you know, yes, he's a rookie governor, never had been in political office before, but it's the old, you know, 60-30. How do you get 60 votes in the House? How do you get 30 votes in the Senate? That's if you want to move an agenda, that's the fundamental bottom line. How do you get those votes? Instead, it's, you know, it's a corrupt system. The legislature is corrupt and everybody is morally corrupt.
You know, and I hate to, you know, sound like the old curmudgeon, although I guess I am. Look back at Jim Thompson. He was governor for 14 years. In only two of those years did the Republicans control the House. They never controlled the Senate. So Thompson was always working with Democratic majorities, and he accomplished an awful lot. I'm not going to go through and recount all of it. We don't have time for it. But he was a very successful governor because he was able to compromise. He was able to work with the other side. He was able to look for common ground. And he didn't have as a core notion that we have to destroy public employee unions.
And the other problem that Governor Rauner has right now, Brian, if he's trying to talk about, if he decided tomorrow that I'm going to try to work closer with Democrats, right now in his primary race, he has a very conservative opponent who will probably attack him for anything he says regarding that. So he's really going to get it from either side, no matter what he comes out with.
Yeah, although you wouldn't know it from him because he never barely ever acknowledges his opponent. I don't think he's committed to doing any debates with her. And he even referred to her as a fringe candidate on the day she filed.
And that's Jeannie Ives, the representative.
Jeannie Ives, yeah, mm-hmm. State representative from Wheaton, Republican, very conservative. And she, you know, she cites the public funding for abortion bill that the governor signed. She cites a bill dealing with immigrants and law enforcement that she derides as a so-called sanctuary bill. Although the governor and Democrats disagree with that characterization, he's definitely getting it from all sides here as he tries to navigate. And you know, everything he's doing is a very delicate balance. On the one hand, he, you know, wants to say, I'm the guy who can fix Illinois. And, you know, now he's, you know, he's gearing up for reelection. He wants to try and highlight the, you know, whatever positive things he can. But it's also part of his core message to say how terrible things still are in Illinois. And he, you know, talked about how he was on a Southern Illinois, Bernie Schoenberg, the columnist at the State Journal Register, had a piece this week about how he was on with a Southern Illinois radio program and talked about how you couldn't get anyone to fill the old Mitsubishi plant in Normal. Well, Bernie pointed out the governor actually attended a news conference where somebody bought that plant earlier this year and is supposed to start production of vehicles there. A company called Riven Automotive, if I remember correctly. So, you know, he's walking this delicate balance politically. He's walking it with his message about the economy of Illinois. And, you know, I was struck, as Rick said, I think at the beginning of this, how sort of, I don't know if laid back is even the right term, morose or quiet. You know, he was described as being at this editorial board pretty far from the eager, excited, happy warrior that he portrayed himself as when he first began running 4 years ago.
Speaking of that radio interview, I mean, which I found very interesting, was he was asked about signing that HB 40, the taxpayer subsidized expansion of abortion, and he was asked, what do you tell Republicans that are upset with you over that? And his response was, nobody's more of a supporter of pro-life candidates than me. And basically talking about how he has funded candidates who oppose abortion rights, even though when he signed the bill, you know, he talked about how the reason he signed it was because he had to remain true to his values. But in answering that question on a Southern Illinois radio station, obviously more conservative area, he never mentioned why he signed the bill, only that basically his value is using his checkbook to support abortion rights opponents. I mean, you insult both sides of that issue right there. And how do you find a base going forward?
Well, one thing's for certain, he has fewer constituents to worry about because the state has lost, it looks like, another 33,000 or so people, according to the latest census estimates that came out this week. And that dropped the state behind Pennsylvania. We, for so long, have been the fifth most populous state in the country. Now we are number sixth, according to these estimates. Charlie, is this cause for concern?
I would say it's problematic. On the one hand, it's kind of a drop in prestige. But to me, the more interesting question will be, when the official census is taken in 2020, will the state's population decline be such that the state loses another seat in Congress? Now, after the last several censuses, we've lost seats in Congress because the 435 members of the House of Representatives are apportioned based mostly on population. There's some guarantee that every state will get at least one. But other than that, it's based on population. At one time, Illinois had 25 members of the U.S. House of Representatives. And so the worry is that we're going to lose further representation in Congress if, in fact, as I say, after the next census, still down in population. After the last census, we had grown kind of marginally, not keeping up with the states in the South and in the West, which gained new congressional seats.
And Brian, when it comes to this, you know, the governor, we've talked all show about, you know, some inconsistencies and in what he's saying, things like that. But does he have some points about the state needs to make some changes? I mean, these numbers, I could say, hey, the proof is in the numbers. We are losing population.
Yeah, we are losing population. You know, there's a lot of different factors. You do hear people talking about the high property tax rates, and now, of course, the income tax rate is higher than it used to be. You also hear people complaining about the weather. And I think you cannot underestimate the importance of the budget impasse, particularly among 18 and 19-year-olds who are deciding where to go to college. So there's a woman who's done an analysis of these using not only census numbers but tax numbers of what demographic groups are leaving Illinois. And the highest single age group are 18 and 19-year-olds. So I think that it's important to consider why are people choosing to go to college elsewhere. They often stay wherever they go to. They don't come back here to Illinois. And, you know, so the governor makes his points about business. Other people raise these points about, well, maybe we should be doing more to make Illinois universities more attractive for people. But it is something that is a long-term trend. Illinois has been losing population for most of the last 100-plus years.
And, Rick, just about 20 seconds or so, but I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in on this as well, these numbers and what this could mean going forward.
Well, Charlie hit on it, and I think, frankly, everybody's expecting that after the next census, Illinois is going to lose one seat. I think now the concern is, do we lose two seats? And that could make things, you know, very interesting as far as where we fit into congressional clout and what can Illinois representatives do in Washington.
It's time now for our notes from the field. Charlie, you want to start?
Yeah. There was an interesting development in terms of the opioid crisis this past week. Five suburban counties, the collar counties around Cook County, Lake, McHenry, Will, DuPage, and Kane, filed a federal lawsuit or joined in a federal lawsuit against pharmaceutical manufacturers. And their argument was that because of the aggressive and fraudulent marketing of prescription opioid painkillers, these companies have contributed to a corporate-caused drug epidemic. So it'll be interesting to see where that suit winds up.
Rick?
Yes. Well, actually following up on that discussion with Congress, obviously we have Congressman Luis Gutierrez is retiring, so there's a big battle for the 4th Congressional District seat, the Claw, as it's known, because it was drawn to bring together disparate geographies of Latinos. I was asking them, given the fact that Illinois is likely to lose representation, I talked to some people in the Hispanic community, given that fact, is it going to be harder to keep a Latino seat? In fact, they say that with demographic changes that have gone on in the city and the suburbs, they think Illinois is entitled to a second Hispanic representation seat in Congress.
And Brian.
Interesting news out of Cook County this week. The sheriff there says the county's jail population has fallen below 6,000 inmates. It's the first time this has happened in decades. This is part of a national movement to change the way bail is set for inmates. The chief judge ordered lower or more affordable bail amounts for people who are charged with nonviolent crimes.
That will do it for today. The members of the broadcast, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Rick Pearson. Don't forget, you can get a podcast of our show on nprillinois.org. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.